Welcome to another episode from Just Tales, a monthly hybrid of fictional and non-fictional stories that compel me to rant. There'll always be a golf story or two laced into my blog because, well, it's where I spend a good amount of my recreational time. So whether you're a golfer or not, if you're a skeptic, doubter, or open-minded, this is the place for you. So kick back and listen. Welcome to episode 115, Three Martinis and a Meatball. And if I sound a little nasally, it's because the weather change here in Charleston has definitely affected my sinuses. But anyway, the title is going to become more self-evident after I begin to tell my stories. Last episode, I shared how knowing your putter arc tendencies can inform you on the best type of putter to use. And since that episode, I've had several local golfers in Charleston come into the shop purposely to test their arc tendencies and then purchase the weapon that will help them stroke more winning putts. Here's how my demented imagination works. It starts with the book, The Sword and the Stone, written by T.H. White. It tells a story of Arthur, who was the only one to pull a mysterious sword from a stone, and it was revealed that he was the rightful king of the Britons. And if you're anything like me, you've seen the Disney movie and not necessarily read his book. But some of my listeners are a lot more erudite than I, so they've probably read the book. But here's where my active imagination takes flight. After being tested, when a golfer learns of their particular swing arc for the first time and are handed a putter with the toe hang that fits that swing arc, and then, like magic, they make three consecutive putts in a row. To me, I imagine King Arthur pulling the sword from the stone.
That sword is stuck fast in solid stone.
And you're going to pull it out.
Merlin, it's impossible.
Arthur, you're the true king of Camelot.
That was last episode's epiphany. Before I get into this episode's enlightenment in golf, I have this other story to tell that has really nothing to do with golf, but has everything to do with connecting. If you're anything like me, you've heard horror stories about online dating. Fraudulent photos, embellished backgrounds, sham profiles. Most women I've spoken to about eHarmony, Tinder, Silver Singles, Christian Mingle, J-Date, Coffee Meets Bagel, and even Ashley Madison, the number one site to cheat on your partner, all have horror stories because, face it guys, the truth hurts. And in a world of swiping, without a little bit of embellishment or prevarication, are all left swipes. And you know a left swipe is like, nope, not interested. Posting older photos when you still had hair, a flatter belly, and less drooping. The number one thing to do before selling a house is to stage it, to make it look younger, tidier, and more attractive. So why wouldn't everybody stage their photos for online dating? I mean, it makes perfect sense. In marketing, we spend a good portion of our day getting the packaging right. It has to be clean, convey the message you want, and stand out from all the other products on the shelf. But even in marketing, some brands take liberty in stretching the truth to make the product seem more sellable. I mean, effectively, isn't that what good online profiles are supposed to do? My good friend and kindred spirit, Ki Sun, will be featured in this upcoming HBO series called Swiping America, where the basic premise is how people are looking for their soulmate and using online dating as the search engine. Look, I hope this series does well, and I hope she does, because of the exposure, she's introduced to that special connection that's clearly different from all the other guys she swiped and said no to. Face it, connecting on all levels with a stranger is hard. I call it checking boxes. And the older we get, the more boxes we have, and the more rigid we become about boxes that are absolutely non-negotiable. It's ironic that most people look for trust, integrity, commitment, and forgiveness as the top characteristics in a relationship, but yet the boxes they swipe and check are like the outdoors, hair color, faith, politics, likes to travel, foodie. None of those are the three most important things that people value in a relationship. But, you know, to pierce through the outside, you got to start with the simpler, more superficial things. I guess you got to start somewhere. But like I said, packaging is important. All the things we like and like to do are just the outward packaging and a self-image of what we want others to think of us and how we like to pass the time. The glue in a relationship usually takes time to avail itself as you both confront highs and lows in your lives. And as said by those well before me, true character is tested during the lows. So back to my online dating experience. I, like many of my friends, feel that online dating is for other people. Lonely, desperate, socially awkward people that just find it hard to connect in public. That's certainly a percentage of online daters, but it's not the entirety of the participants. Those who choose not to participate might feel like dating and finding a perfect match should happen organically. Humans have mated for tens of thousands of years, and until recent history, by physically encountering them or being set up by others who think they're a good fit or just want them in their inner circle. Fixed marriages are still happening around the world, where cultural stability overrides personal choice. Outside of that, organically finding a connection by putting yourself out there, increasing your frequency, and expanding your circle of places to go has been the tried and true method of catch and release, or sometimes catch and take home. But now with remote work, busy lives, putting yourself out there more often could rub up against your time and even budget boundaries. You know, if you think about it, the way in which we acquire goods and services online has changed our shopping and buying habits, particularly since the pandemic. Most everything we need can be found at the click of a mouse or a touchscreen. So why not partners as well? People that say, I want to meet somebody organically, might be looking at the world through rose-colored glasses. Are we really open to meet somebody at the grocery store or anywhere in public other than a bar or organized activity like co-ed kickball? Hey, it's a thing, but not for every age group. I believe in the law of big numbers. If you flip a coin 10 times, it might come up heads or tails less or more than 50% of the time. But if you flip that same coin a million times, there's a greater chance it's going to be 50-50. And I think that's the same with a hunt for a partner. That means if your organic search is exclusive, you have to put yourself out there likely more than you have time for, or you just have to get lucky. With online search, you can speed up the process and you're focused 100% on finding a match. If you're out in the grocery store, you're looking for plums and bananas. So purely from a numbers standpoint, online provides a harem of opportunities that just all you need to do is swipe the same as the other person, which leads me to my story. I finally decided a couple of weeks ago to serve myself up to the gods of online connection in the form of Bumble, a dating service that gives women first right of refusal. My first dilemma is that I could not find any selfie or photo where I wasn't wearing sunglasses. I mean, most of my photos are taken out in the wild, out on a golf course, and I like to wear sunglasses. And so I had to search and search, and I finally found a few pics. Because, quite frankly, people want to see the whites of your eyes. I mean, if you're wearing sunglasses and that's the only pictures you have, what are you hiding? The next part was filling out my online profile. Creating your own narrative is challenging. In the Bumble app, you had to choose a few things that are most important to you, eliminating a lot of other things that are also important to you. It basically distills what you value the most into a very short list. Then you have to develop some witticisms that differentiate you from the pack and other people. That's optional, but serves to help others decide whether you check more or less of their boxes. So as you mature, those boxes become more non-negotiable, as I said before. And, you know, when you were young and less experienced about what you liked and disliked, your boxes were probably, what's the face look like? What's the body look like? And do they love the outdoors? You know, that's basically it. Maybe with a few more boxes that are deal breakers. As you get older, there's a lot more boxes you check. So as you live through more life stages, you desire more attributes that your previous partners probably didn't possess. That's why you're here in the first place, barring widows and widowers. So I complete my profile and put myself out there. Now, as soon as I do that, that frees me up to see what women in the age range that I chose would be looking, basically that are also in the market to meet somebody. And you'd be surprised how many blurry and shitty selfies that people provide on the dating service. I mean, those were quick left swipes. If they can't take the time to provide a focused shot, something smells in Denmark. So I'm filtering through a list of 50 plus women and swiping right only on a few that seemed interesting to me. And within a day, I start getting responses from three different women that I had swiped right to. That starts the talking phase, as my kids say. But one of the three stood out from the others. I recognized that she was from my old stomping grounds, and she recognized I also was a New Yorker. I haven't dated a girl from New York since my senior year in high school. The girls I dated in college were from other states. And after a few intimate relationships in and out of college, I settled down with a girl from Northern Virginia with a mom who is a beauty queen from Mississippi, a far departure from the sights and sounds of Long Island. So back to this girl. After a few back and forth texts, we decide to meet. There's just something in the way this girl expressed herself that I got. It's like old kindred spirits. So at that point, we both must have checked enough boxes. We decide to meet up. And now we join the tens of millions of others that have done this before us. It's like a moderately blind date. You've seen their photo. You've bantered back and forth with them in text, but there's always more hidden below the surface. So an hour or so before we meet up, I decide to give her a call just so I could hear her voice and that she could hear mine. I think it makes it best when two people are going to meet physically that not only have they seen each other, but they've heard each other. I think voice matters. So after the call, it went well enough where we both didn't decide not to meet. So we make our first meet and greet. It was less of a discovery. We'd seen what we looked like, we've heard what we sounded like, and we've texted back and forth. Have you ever met somebody and immediately felt like you know this person and you've known them for a while? And with her, maybe it was the New York swagger. Maybe it could have been the Long Island accent, or maybe the fact that it was just how her inked-fit body just looked, particularly when she came in a first impression. There are a lot of things you could say to somebody, first impression. Nice to meet you. Hi. You know, you could kind of make it less awkward. And what does stupid Richie say? Man, you are ripped. But it didn't scare her away. because she spends time working out, probably proud of the result of that. Whatever the combination was, an hour into our conversation, we're deep into life stories, laughs, and legitimacy. Her experience with online dating wasn't the same as mine. I think I was date number 25. That's kissing a lot of frogs. She actually went on date number 24 the night before she met me, and thank God it didn't go swimmingly well. Or the title of this episode might have been Failure in the Online Community. And she shared with me that she had such bad experiences, she actually developed this cookie cutter Dear John letter, letting the dates know that they just didn't check enough boxes, but thank you for the drinks, or something like that. Yeah, so I think after the first martini, she was thinking, yeah, I might as well stay for the second. And then after the second, when we went to the third, I'm thinking she was thinking what I was thinking. Let's continue this discovery stage. Oh yeah, and by the way, we got an order of meatballs. And so far in the last week, I haven't gotten that Dear John letter yet, so I guess it's going well. I don't manifest my demise. At this point, it's past the vision stage and onto the discovery stage. Open disclosure on where all the bodies are buried and what led up to the closure stage. Like, why did they break up? Everything has a life cycle. Online dating is like the Big Bang. Everything else starts the cycle of life from that point on. And as most can attest, the discovery stage is the bomb. So my New York accent is slowly returning, and I could only suppress it for so long. I'm finding myself starting to sound like Joey Tribbiani again. Hey, how you doing? Clear those hips, baby. If you're not a fan of golf or not trying to improve your game, this next segment, well, your eyes will start to glaze over halfway through it. This episode's enlightenment is clearing your hips on the downswing.
When you are at the golfing ball, you need to understand one really nasty, tremendous situation in the mind. I just want you to think, peep it to the pin. You get it? You see what it is? Peep it to the pin. Now, I'm not being sexism. It's peep it to the pin. Just think about peep it to the pin.
One of the benefits of doing a side hustle in this small, intimate golf shop is that I occasionally walk by open-doored lessons and fitting rooms and listen to some of the wisdom that our pros are sharing with their clients. What I find fascinating with lessons are that they are customized observations of that pupil's swing flaws with prescriptions of advice to correct them. One size does not fit all in golf. What might work effectively for one golfer might not work for somebody else. So if you have a friend that you're playing golf with and you're a little frustrated and your friend starts giving you tips on what the pro told them, I would respectfully thank them and try and put your hands up to your ears, because whatever they learned might help them, but it might not help you. But one thing that's universal with all good golf swings, whether you're young, old, short, tall, muscle-bound, lanky, male or female, when a golfer starts their downswing, they must clear their hips. Not slide them, like Elvis Presley. Not keep them stiff like Arnold Schwarzenegger. You've got to be able to turn your hips and rotate them like you're in a barrel. Freddie Couples has been my favorite swinger of the golf club ever since I watched him play live 20-something years ago. Had never heard of him before because at that time I really wasn't into watching pro golfers. But I got invited to go to this event up at Peter Jacobson's place in Portland, Oregon, and Freddie happened to be out there, and I was following golfers, and I see this guy swing a golf club, and I am like, that is butter. That is the smoothest swing I've ever seen. And most people look at him and say, hey, it's this wide shoulder turn, smooth rhythm, swing speed, and follow through that are undeniably a vision that separates him from other golfers. But if you look at his swing in slow motion, the one thing that's constant that helps him make the rest of the swing look like molasses is how he clears his hips to allow that past parallel shoulder turn to build up enough torque to fire the club quickly online. If he doesn't clear his hips, then he does what's called blocking a shot and hits it right into another zip code. I mean, I am talking right of the right field line. Right of Hank Aaron, Babe Ruth, Frank Robinson, or Sammy Sosa, and those are likely the last baseball references you'll ever hear from me on this podcast. Hip clearing is a high-speed generator to allow your shoulders and arms to swing the club on path. So one of those days, I was walking by all the bays and watching the pros teach. I saw one of the pros who I really admire his style. It's very cash, it's very chill, but boy, he knows how to make a point. And his drill was to rotate your hips and not slide them, was you take a golf club or an aiming stick, hold it parallel to the ground up against your belt buckle. If you're a righty, hold the stick with your left hand. If you're a lefty, hold it with your right hand. Practice your golf posture, and then turn your hips like you're taking your club back and keep the stick in your left hand turning parallel to the ground. If you are Elvis Presley and you like to slide your hips, then you're going to notice that stick or that club, as you turn, is not parallel to the ground. The tip of the stick that's facing your target will be shooting upwards. It will not be turning to the left or to the right. It needs to stay parallel. And then while you're doing that, you take the other hand that is not holding the stick or the club. You put it up against your ribs, almost like you're taking the club back. So it's going to make you turn your torso, move your shoulders, and then turn back. And if you do this a few times and you get that motion of turning, twisting, then when you swing a golf club, you have a much better chance of clearing your hips. Golfers that are called club humpers, that means they stand up and slide their hips on their downswing, rely on their arms to do all of the work. And when they do that, if their timing is not perfect, it is a major block to the right or a major hook to the left. It's hard to keep the ball online. If you learn to do this drill often, to rotate and clear your hips, your chances of hitting with better impact, more flush shots, are exponentially higher than a sliding hip shot. You know, but what do I know? I'm just pirating observations. But if you try it, like I've tried it, you'll hit some of your best shots, whether it's an iron or a driver, like I have. Turn your hips, clear your hips. Don't be Elvis Presley.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog, girl. You're crying all the time. You ain't nothing but a hound dog, girl. Crying all the time. Well, you ain't never caught a rabbit and you ain't no friend of mine.
Well, there you go. More life and golf stories. I'm your host, Rich Easton, telling tales from beautiful Charleston, South Carolina. Talk to you soon.